The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts. The temple is an affiliate of Boundless Way Zen, a multi-lineage school of Zen Buddhism.
Gateless Gate, case number 30. Matsu, this very mind is Buddha. Dame asked Matsu, "What is Buddha?" Matsu said, "This very mind is Buddha." And the verse, "The blue sky and bright day, no more searching around. What is Buddha, you ask? Hiding loot, you declare your innocence." We'll be talking about this koan today, this very brief and yet very far-reaching teaching story. This morning I'll begin, and then David Roshi will continue the talk. We'll share it, and Melissa may address it in her encouragement talk tonight. So you'll hear from all three of us. So Matsu, and Ma was his name. Su means master. And so this is Master Ma, or as he's often referred to fondly, Great Master Ma. Matsu was a very important teacher in the Chan tradition. He was a teacher in the 8th century when Chan, the Chinese name for Zen, when Chan was still establishing itself. And Matsu had a lot to do with the success of Chan. He had over 100 Dharma heirs, taught so many. And this contributed a lot to what's sometimes called the golden age of Chan in the 9th century, in 9th century China. And so what was this great teacher like as a teacher? This gives us a taste. Dame asked Matsu, "What is Buddha?" Matsu said, "This very mind is Buddha." What is Buddha? What a great question. Here we are calling ourselves Zen Buddhists, practicing something we named the Buddha way. So what is this Buddha? It can't be a statue. That can't be Buddha. It can't be a dead historical person. It must be something that's alive in some way, something that is present to us right now at this moment, something that is directly involved with our practice. So what is Buddha? And Matsu gives Dame a wonderful pointer. This very mind is Buddha. Just this one short phrase is so rich. This very mind is Buddha. I'm really happy and grateful that the translators didn't translate this "mind is Buddha." Mind is Buddha might send us spinning off in the wrong direction. We might be tempted to get all philosophical and start to think in terms of philosophy 101 oppositions like subjective and objective and noumena and phenomena and whatever else we retain from that sophomore year course. And it would just get us deeper and deeper into the mire. So he doesn't say mind is Buddha. He doesn't allow us to start thinking of some free-floating mind stuff in the cosmos that we could connect to. He says, this very mind is Buddha. This very mind, talking directly to his student, Dame, pointing back to the questioner. This very mind that asked the question is Buddha. This very mind that wants to follow the way is Buddha. This can be hard for us to accept, that it's this mind, the one that we have already, not the one that we fantasize we could have if we were really, really, really good Zen students. Sometimes teachers can mislead us in well-meaning enough ways by talking about big mind and small mind, as though what we have now is a small mind and there's a big mind out there. That's not what they mean, but this is how we can easily misinterpret it. There's a big mind out there waiting for us that we could tap into, that we could somehow exchange our little minds for or run our little minds into. No, there's nothing small about this mind, this very mind that you have right now. This amazing mind that you're using, for example, at this moment, a little two-dimensional image is moving a bit on a screen, and there are some sounds coming out of little speakers in your computer or in your earbuds. And somehow you know that there's a living three-dimensional human being speaking to you, heart to heart. That's pretty incredible. I don't think there's any other animal that could do that. Maybe a very social animal like a dog or a very smart animal like a chimpanzee could be trained repeatedly to get some sense of a person on this little screen in this two-dimensional box. But I doubt it. I doubt it would be the same. And we do it effortlessly. So this mind we have is quite amazing. And it is not small, it's vast. This very mind, though, this mind is yours. Don't make the mistake of thinking you can find it anywhere else. Matsu and his line constantly insist on this. Matsu is said to have introduced shouts and blows into Zen teaching as a way of provoking his students to not look someplace else, right here, not outside you, no place else. Don't fantasize about Buddha being anywhere else than right here. Don't imagine you need a different mind than this very mind that you already have. We sometimes need to be prodded to accept this, that we could have everything we need right here. How amazing. And we just need someone to point us in that direction, which is what Matsu tries to do in this koan. So this is your mind that's being talked about in this koan, this very mind. But don't think that it's a private mind. Don't think that it belongs to you in some simple way. Don't think it's your mind and not my mind, or my mind and not your mind. There's no possessiveness in this mind. Don't think that it stops where your skin stops. Don't think it's confined to the 3 pounds of matter in your brain or even to your whole nervous system, because this mind extends out to the entire universe. This mind is made up of the entire universe. These aren't separate, mind and world. They're not opposed. They are seamlessly intertwined. And so when Matsu says to Dame, this very mind is Buddha, he doesn't just mean Dame's personal mind, but his mind extending to all beings, sentient and insentient. At the end of the Bodhisattva's vow that we recited together, we say, may we share this mind with all beings. We might also put it, may we realize that we share this mind with all beings. That would mean the same thing. Matsu, in the reading from Matsu, great master Ma himself, says, the myriad forms of the entire universe are the seal of the single Dharma. So this very mind includes the myriad forms of the entire universe. Nowhere else to look, because it's all right here. And then the verse that Wu Men, the editor of the Gateless Gate, adds, Wu Men loves to put his own spin on these koans to advance his own understanding as a model to us to understand them in our own ways, to take them to heart. And Wu Men writes, the blue sky and bright day, no more searching around. A kind of tribute, I think, to Dame's sincerity. He really wants to know what this Buddha stuff is. What have we been saying all this time when we talk about Buddha and the Buddha way? And Matsu gives him a way to stop searching. No more searching around. That doesn't mean that Matsu gives him a way to stop practicing. This very mind of Buddha is not a statement of fact so much as it is an invitation to practice, an invitation to a kind of living, a way of living. This very mind is Buddha. According to the story, Dame moved to a little hut near Matsu's monastery within walking distance and practiced there for years. And a monk from Matsu's monastery visited him once. And Dame asked, what is Matsu teaching these days? And the monk said, he's teaching no mind, no Buddha. And Dame said, I'm still working with this very mind is Buddha. I love that. No need for him to switch it up. This very mind is Buddha. So this is our practice. This is our way. I invite David Roshi to continue the talk. Unmuting.
Wu Men, the great teacher who compiled these this koan collection called The Gateless Gate, as Alan said, he provides us with a verse to each of the koan. He also writes a brief commentary. So this is a Wu Men's commentary. So Dame asked Matsu, what is Buddha? Matsu said, this very mind is Buddha. And Wu Men's comment, if you can grasp the point directly, you wear Buddha's robes, eat Buddha's food, speak Buddha's words, take Buddha's role. That is, you yourself are Buddha. Dame, however, misled quite a few people into trusting a broken scale. Don't you know you should rinse out your mouth for 3 days when you utter the name Buddha? If you are genuine, you'll run away holding your ears upon just hearing the words, this very mind is Buddha. So this very mind is Buddha. These teachings that we inherit, these the wonderful written teachings of Zen that have been passed on, these stories, these pointers are in one way, as Alan said, quite a wonderful thing. And this pointing at Dame, at his question, and this pointing at your question. This morning, Melissa Roshi said, what is important? As we go through this sesshin together, as we go through this morning or this afternoon, what is important? What is most important? So I said last night that this is not a short sesshin, but we might also say that this is not a long life. This life we find ourselves in the middle of, with all of its joys and sorrows. We don't know how much longer, but we do know that at some point each one of us will breathe our last breath. And this form that is you, your personality, your problems, your gifts, you will disappear. You will fall back into the everything that you came from. I will fall away. I will disappear. This very mind is Buddha. Your longing. What is your question? What is it in this moment? I so appreciate Dharma Holder Alan talking about it not being personal. These lives we have with our so-called successes and failures, quite hard not to take it so personal. But as we sit in our Zazen posture, sit still and unmoving, perhaps we can catch a glimpse of this arising and falling and these ideas coming, these concepts, these stories, one after the other. The story of who you think you are, the story of how you think you're doing. These stories that lead us to such intense emotions. We tell a story and then we react as if the story were true. But if you can hang around long enough, coming back to your breath, coming back to the sound of the rain or the dog or the leaf blower, coming back to this moment, we can begin to find our way. And Wu Men said, says, you wear Buddha's robes. If you're looking for Buddha, she, he, they are right here, breathing your breath. You are the Buddha. And so we sit as best we can. We sit as the Buddha who has forgotten they are Buddha. We sit as the Buddha who is bored. We sit as the Buddha who is inspired. And as we study life, this great experiment of Zazen, this great experiment of being human, as we study, we can begin to see maybe it's not quite as personal as we thought. And maybe the pain, the anxiety, the joy that I feel is not just my pain, not just my quivering heart, but this is the quivering heart of all beings. Just like a poet, when they write, they touch something very particular. And in this particular, find the universal. So we enter through the particular. We're encouraged to care about where we are, to respond appropriately. Our Zazen is not a way to escape our life, not a way to transcend our life, but to enter your life, which is the life of all worlds, which is the life of the Buddha. The Buddha is in the house. the temple, the Zendo, right here. And this universal here, this center of the universe, each one of us sits as best we can. So what does it mean to sit as the Buddha? This morning, this afternoon, this evening, what does it mean to eat your lunch as the Buddha? Buddha eats lunch. Buddha goes for a walk. This very mind is Buddha. Wu Men goes on to say that we should wash our mouth out with soap for 3 days after we talk about Buddha, because, of course, anything we say makes it seem like it is a thing. What is this Buddha thing? Buddha is no thing. Nothing to grasp, nowhere to look, nothing but Buddha. And Wu Men quite slyly undercuts, we may think, this very mind is Buddha. Okay, now I know the last word of Zen. If I just hold this with me, this idea, these words, this concept, reading Robert Aitken's commentary on this piece, he says that concepts have three phases of their life. And he said the first phase is where it's meaningful. You hear some words from a teacher or from the checkout person in the grocery store, and something shifts for you. Oh, just this. So these concepts, these wonderful Zen concepts, he says, first begin as meaningful, and then they slide into being brittle. We hold on to what we think we have. Now I understand, I will hold on to this. And it gets brittle. And then the third phase, he says, is that they break apart. This practice of Zen is not a practice that leads to a fixed understanding. This very mind is Buddha. In another story, another koan, Matsu is asked, what is Buddha? And he says, not mind, not Buddha. Saying yes, saying no. How do we sit as Buddha? Buddha looks for Buddha, and in the looking, everything is accomplished. Here in Worcester this morning, there's a light rain falling. A gardener's delight, just constant dripping. Sprinkling, everything is wet. Everything is equal in this rain, the moisture wetting the leaves and the flowers, soaking down into the roots. The plants don't have to do anything. And maybe we human beings are more like plants than we think. Maybe this teaching, these teachings of Zen, maybe the Dharma is all around us. The Dharma rain falls on you and falls on me. What do I need to do? Nothing. This very mind, this moment, is the moment of all worlds. Everything has led to this point, and this point, this place, this time, this taste, this sensation contains all the whole universe. We ask ourselves and ask each other to slow down, to as we are able to stop the headlong rush, and we fall into this headlong rush in our lives, in our Zen practice. I need to make sure to work really hard this period. But what if you, like the yellow primrose that are blooming in my garden, what if you don't have to work so hard? Is it possible to sit as a Buddha, to walk as Buddha, Buddha bored, Buddha at ease, Buddha discouraged, Buddha inspired? Matsu pointing Dame to his question, to his the moment of the arising of what is most important. What is this? Who am I exactly? Exactly this sound of the rain. Knees a little bit sore already. And here we are together in good company. Dame asked Matsu, "What is Buddha?" Matsu said, "This very mind is Buddha." Thank you. So please sit comfortably. And we'll have our Dharma dialogue. Dharma holder Alan and Melissa Roshi and I will respond and encourage you to come forth with what is alive for you. As you hear these words, as you sit in Zazen, what is alive? Dawn.
Hi, thank you for the talk. Both of you, very good, always. So something I'm always grappling with is the In Zen practice is the ideas of like the stories, and they tell you something and then it's like, but it's not that thing, and always going back and forth. And I don't know, for some reason this time, maybe a way that it helped, I don't know if it really helped me understand anything, but I was thinking of like, if someone points across the yard and says, "Look at that cat," and you're like, "Where?" It's like, "It's sitting." That's true. But tomorrow when they're like, "Look at that cat," and you look for a sitting cat, you might not find it because it's running, but that's also true. And just the thought that the reason it's so hard to nail down is because it's all change. It's always changing, and it's always true in whatever state it's in. At least those are the weird thoughts that my brain made while I was listening. Thank you.
Not so weird, really, but right on point. We always want to settle in, and this is the teaching, but your example of the cat is perfect, really. It's there right now, and then it's not there, and if you insist, no, I saw that cat, that's the truth. That's what we call delusive certainty, right? And so this whole practice is really about learning how to be flexible to perceive what's happening now and not grab onto it too tightly. That story that Alan told about the monk who went to visit Dame, he went back to Matsu and reported what Dame had said. And Dame's name literally means great plum. And Matsu said, "Ah, the plum is ripe." right? Not because he was holding on to this very mind as Buddha, but because he was engaging with the practice for himself, but not for himself alone. That he was, these things can be explored endlessly. And so, you know, the great dawn is rising. We could make up something like that. Yeah, there, oh, how beautiful. Each one of us is really unique, even though we all share this Buddha mind. So we find our way into the teachings however we can. And your example shows me that you really get something about the way things are. And then you saying it out loud to the group, this is why we encourage people to come forward, illuminates things for me, and I bet for other people too. So thank you for your teaching, Don.
Craig.
Thank you. When Alan said the mind doesn't stop at the skin, that has really been resonating with me. I'm spending a lot of time outdoors here in New Hampshire, and my skin feels really thin. I mean, my thumb is itching because during Kinhin, a mosquito left a little bit of herself inside my skin. I'm hearing the rain on the leaves, and they're right beside me. As I walked in Kinhin, it was right on my skin. It just felt like the whatever barrier there is between what I think myself is and the world, it gets really porous when I'm outdoors. And of course, it's much easier when you're outdoors. It's harder when the wintertime and you're bundled up with sweaters and windows closed and the like. But the idea that I get lots of evidence that the mind doesn't stop at the skin.
Yeah, wonderfully said, Craig. And I love that you used the word porous in its literal sense, that our skin is literally covered with pores, you know, little openings. And then we have the big openings, our eyes, our ears, our nose, and so our mouths, the body of 9 or 10 holes, as it's sometimes called in our tradition. And yeah, constant interchange, constant, even our breath practice is a practice of breathing in and breathing out of a practice that goes against any sense of being cut off from the world, of being somehow enclosed. But we are only alive because in that constant interchange that you speak of. And nice that you fed the mosquito while we were sitting.
Great. Thanks, Craig. Paul.
Thank you for the talks. Appreciate it. And the particular kind of deep dive as far as here, really appreciated that. One thing that really jumped out to me was, David, you talk about this rain, and I have rain here, that similar style of rain, different rain, but same rain in this sense. This aspect of the gardener's, I can't remember the word that you said, but the gardener's blessing, or, you know, something that we really appreciate. And, there's part of what's coming up for me is this aspect of this mind and, this idea of being nurtured and soaked through. And just as I, the gardener, may think that I'm growing potatoes, that, you know, I'm growing parsley, or Bridget, my wife, is growing bearded irises. They're growing. They're growing themselves. And also this requirement of I still, when it's not raining, I have to water the garden. I still pull the weeds. As far as along the way, I'm not growing the potatoes, but I'm facilitating an environment where it makes it more likely that they will grow. And it just got me right back to Sashin, the questions that you were asking, David, last night. This aspect is, you know, why are we here? What do we want? And this is what I want. I want to be attended to. I want to be nurtured. I want to be supported. I want to be watered. The talk soaked me through. I want to be tended to in this way. So just really appreciate the talk.
I'm appreciating the bearded iris that Bridget is cultivating that I see on the screen.
Right. They're beautiful. Oh, well, thank you. Got it.
And so to also appreciate this, being clear who's doing the work, that there is work required, right? You know, as you say, as gardeners and in our Zazen, something is required to show up, right, to create these conditions. And in some ways, it's the conditions to allow life to happen, right? To allow our life to unfold. It's like, I want to unfold my life. I want to unfold my life. Right? But and I guess that we might say we're practicing a kind of faith, just like the gardener. Every time I put a seed in the ground, there's a kind of faith. I'm pretty sure something might happen. But practicing this faith, and as we sit in our Zazen, every time we sit down, coming to Sesshin, coming to every period, it's an act of faith. Well, let's see what happens if I don't have to try, if I don't do it. Will the universe go on? Will I go on? So we participate, we join in this great stream of the Dharma. Awakening.
Paul, when you mentioned your potatoes, I thought of this favorite moment in Thoreau's Walden. When Thoreau's talking about his own sitting practice, he would sit on the steps of his cabin in the mornings, sometimes for hours. And he said, at those times, I grew like corn in the night. And so our gardens grow at night, and our practice grows when we're not looking.
Yeah, right. Yeah, lovely. Thank Great. You.
Thanks. Pierce.
So when I think of ancient China, I think of this vast natural landscape where there's a monk hiding behind every stone and bush, waiting to jump out and pose this question, what is Buddha? But of course, Zen masters are never surprised or at a loss, and they always answer differently. And so this is just one of those examples. I especially appreciate the way Alan and David unpacked the answer, because it's very compressed in meaning. It's not a longer story in this koan, especially this very mind, as opposed to just mind, is Buddha. And the reference also to the fact that Matsu has a different answer on a later occasion. And also that Wu Men, you know, takes away Buddha. If you think it's Buddha and I know what Buddha is and it's a thing, then wash your mouth out, because actually, you know, Buddha is just a word. And so that, again, is a very important kind of unpacking that I enjoyed in the two teachings. So thank you.
Thank you. I would suggest that the idea that a Zen master is never surprised or never at a loss may be something to look at more carefully. There are many koan stories where their being surprised or at a loss is the point of the koan. And the thing that's maybe a little different is they're not pretending to not be at a loss. They're not pretending to not be surprised. That there's this capacity that we're growing, like the potatoes and the corn, or that's growing in us, to be surprised, to let ourselves be at a loss, but fully, without trying to pretend that we know everything. That's really important in our development. This practice is not about learning a lot of stuff, reading a lot of books, taking notes. There's not going to be a test at the end of this retreat. This is about being more fully alive. So that means that everything that happens is Buddha, but also it's not mind and it's not Buddha. And every other answer we could give to that question, 3 pounds of flax, and there's just so many, a piece of shit on a stick, right? Yeah, I can see your mouth moving. What an amazing world. Everything is the awakened heart. Exceptions.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Pierce. Anna.
So there was this one thing that David said that kind of struck me when you said that, like, this is how we enter. Because this is my first session, and so this is like my first experience, you know, being away from all the distractions. And so, like, last night after the orientation, I had a half an hour before I was going to go to bed, and I was struggling to find something to do in that half an hour, because I, you know, like, I can't read, I can't watch anything, I can't have a conversation. And so I sat down and I ate a bowl of blueberries, and I immediately realized, like, how much how most of the time all of those distractions are this big barrier, and suddenly the barrier was gone, and it was just like me and the blueberries. And I realized, you know, that each of them tasted different. And so it was sort of just this experience of like, okay, I'm here in this.
Wow.
Yeah, I highly recommend blueberry practice. We should all no, but just appreciating one, you coming to Sesshin, like, oh my God, will I be okay? And then in some ways experiencing what sometimes can seem like limitations. Oh, there's so many rules. But as you say, the rules are about cutting through this barrier, the barrier of busyness, the barrier of, we know, of accomplishing stuff, right? And then how wonderful to have a bowl of blueberries, to go for a walk, to look out the window. Life is so wondrous, and indeed every blueberry tastes different. Who could have imagined? Yeah. Thank you.
And I just want to add, it doesn't have to be all those wonderful things either. Last night, I had a really bad stomach ache. And because I couldn't distract myself, I was lying on the bed being fully with that. And it was such a complex experience. It didn't fit in the box, I have a stomach ache, because of this practice. It just went on and on and on for hours, and it was like, it was better than watching a movie in a way, but it didn't feel good. It was like watching a scary movie or a sad melodrama or something like that. But it was just like chock full of stuff to pay attention to. So everything could be like this, with this sort of just tiny shift in attitude that you experienced, Anna. So great.
Yeah. Great, thank you. Anne.
Yeah, thank you for the talk. I, Alan, also have thought that mind and big mind were separate things. They merged into each other. And when you said they're not, I said, well, why did they use two words then? Why are they trying to confuse me? But also, David used a sutra several days ago where they kept talking about cultivating the mind. I've been worrying about this. I mean, what does it mean to cultivate the mind? What does it mean to cultivate big mind? Once I put them together, I don't know what cultivating the mind means anymore.
Good. I think you're making some progress.
Thank
And always keeping in mind that, you know, Zen teachers are trying to use words to talk about something that can't be put into words. So one teacher might try to do that by talking about big mind and small mind. And another teacher might say, no, that will just confuse you. Not big mind, small mind. And really what you want to find is what works for you, what sends you in the direction where you're starting to really feel it, feel what's being gestured towards, but can't be put exactly into words. Cultivating, you know, sometimes. And then also, as Paul said, just letting the potatoes grow and giving them a little bit of help. Maybe that's what cultivating means. Just that watering when there's no rain, but not watering when there is rain. Knowing when to intervene, knowing when to step back, and not getting hung up on any of those terms, cultivating big, small, not big, not small. Feeling your way in ultimately.
Yeah, I love what you're saying, Alan. I'm also struck so much that we do have words, right? The ficus behind you, Anne, I wouldn't call it Anne, and I wouldn't call you a ficus, but they're different from each other. And also you could say they're the same, you know, but that's being hung up on the way our mind processes ideas. So maybe not trying so hard is the other thing. And saying that you have to figure out what works may be also one of those misleading instructions, because you don't know what does work mean? Do I feel more settled? Do I feel less settled? Maybe feeling less settled is better, worse, good, bad. And there we are. We're stuck in trying to develop a strategy for practice. I doubt that the potatoes have a strategy. Yeah. That's all.
thank you, Anne. We have time for maybe one more. Anyone thinking about raising your hand, just wanting the special invitation? Yeah, Orna.
Hi, thank you for the talk. I must have needed the special invitation.
Oh, good. I'm glad you accepted.
Feeling a tremendous amount of gratitude and just hearing everybody, hearing the talks. And it feels a little bit like, you know, that analogy of the rain, that receiving. I feel there's something receptive, a little more receptive in me at the moment. It closes, but just really grateful for receiving at the moment. Everything from the chants and there was one moment that felt really free when Alan was speaking about Buddha is this very mind, and then I, you know, your mind, and then I really had a sense of, I don't think it is my mind. It was just this lovely feeling of liberation, you know. just lovely to hear the words and all that expanded by everybody, you know, just hearing that. That's just really the feeling at the moment. So feeling very, very grateful.
Yeah. Well, and I think you're talking about this, the porousness in some way that Craig was speaking of.
Mm, yes.
The barrier that Anna spoke of as that, and we can't push it down. We can't, fight our way out, but the barrier sometimes drops in certain conditions. And then there is, I think, this, a shift from I have to go get something to, oh, I can receive what's always been here. And this, the gentle rain of the Dharma washes over us. And it is quite a wonderful thing. Yeah. Thank you for adding that.
Thank you.
So let's come back to our Zazen posture. For a breath, and we'll our practice leaders will take us into Kinyin in a moment.